fighting for America.
Mr. President, in 2010, you called the results of the midterm election shellacking. What do you call this?
Obviously, Republicans had a good night.
Fighting for Idaho.
The president continues to act on his own. He is going to poison the well. When you play with matches, you take the risk of burning yourself. And he's going to burn himself if he continues to get down this path.
Fighting for you.
Why isn't our government doing something about this? I'll be the first one to say it. President Obama does not care about postpartum Taylor Swift disorder.
I'm pretty sure that's why the Democrats lost the Senate.
Voices Mr. Right. Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Good morning. Kevin Miller in the Morning here, 580 KIDO. We're joined by our great friend, Dr. Jerome Corsi. Dr. Corsi, how you been?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Well, you know, here we have Veterans Day coming up, and you've got a new book out, No Greater Valor, The Siege of Bastogne and the Miracle That Sealed Allied Victory. What a change that we have from, you know, total war, total effort, total American patriotism to what's going on today.
Well, and I wrote the book because this battle at Bastogne in World War II, the end of World War II, has fascinated me since I was a kid. My father fought in World War II. I dedicated the book to my father. And his friends would often talk about Bastogne. And it was this little crossroads town in Belgium that held out with very few troops. The 101st Airborne Division got there, one regiment of the 10th Armored from Patton's command, and they were encircled, held out through Christmas in 1944. And the men who fought there believed that, expressed that they felt it had been a miracle, that God had intervened, that otherwise they never would have survived. And that's what fascinated me about the battle since I was a kid, and that is the question of whether or not their faith and their determination to resist Nazi Germany was, in fact, a Christmas miracle. And it's a great story, and I've wanted all my life to write this book, and I'm glad I had the chance to do it.
How does it compare to some of the other books that you've written, more current? Now you go to the historical perspective. I mean, you did the book on Kennedy as well, but there's something magical and special about World War II that we never really appreciate, do we?
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, this was a desperate time at the end of World War II. The Nazis did this huge tank charge, panzer attack, out of the Ardennes forest in December 1944. It was Hitler's last-ditch attempt to survive, have maybe a negotiated settlement, and the Nazi regime would be allowed to survive. And, U.S. troops were overwhelmed. I mean, this was an unexpected attack. We were totally unprepared for it, and the 101st was in bivouac. It had just been taken off the line. It had been suffered tremendous losses fighting since D-Day, and Eisenhower had the 101st. He could put them back into battle, and he did. He sent them in the middle of the night. The 101st packed up in Camp Mermelon in France and traveled over these back roads at night, open trucks, cold weather. They didn't have winter gear, no boots, no overcoats. They had not been resupplied, so very limited in terms of their weapons and their ammunition. And the 28th Infantry, other divisions who had been overwhelmed and virtually routed, were coming, clogging the roads in retreat. And rather than being afraid, the 101st said, "Well, if you're not using that M1, maybe you could give it to me. Or how about that overcoat? I think I could use it." And they resupplied themselves as best they could, heading to the front.
Dr. Jerome Corsi with us. Kevin Miller in the Morning here. Dr. Corsi's new book, No Greater Valor. As we talk about the Siege of Bastogne, the miracle that sealed the Allied victory, what did they have today that we apparently are lacking?
Well, I think they had a great... I mean, first of all, I want to celebrate the troops that our U.S. fighting forces, I think, are the best in the world. And, the 101st is one of the most distinguished divisions out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky. They're now currently in Liberia fighting Ebola. But I tremendously admire our military. I think the issue that seemed to me so important about this battle was that the issue of faith, that especially as we become secular in a society, raised the question of, what do we lose? If we turn our back on God, does God turn his back on us? I mean, you had Patton you know, one of the most fierce generals that we had in World War II, a tank commander, having this massive, you know, forced march to take the Third Army, turn it north, and relieve Bastogne. In the middle of the forced march, the weather was horrible. It was in December 1944, a terrible winter, and no air support, snow, cold. Patton had the chaplain say a prayer for good weather. And remarkably, the weather broke. On December 23rd, when none of the meteorologists had predicted it, there was a break in the weather, and the C-47s and their, you know, brave crews were able to drop just enough air supplies on Bastogne to keep it going. Just when General McAuliffe and the troops were running out of ammunition, down to, you know, one or two shells per gun, per artillery piece, the resupply occurred and they were able to continue fighting. And that was seen at the time as a miracle.
Dr. Corsi, what were the Nazis like as fighters?
They were fierce. I mean, even at the end of World War II, they were very dangerous. One of the greatest, you know, most atrocious events of World War II was occurred with there was this Nazi unit of SS, and they actually mowed down 100 POWs that were standing in a field having no weapons and had surrendered. This atrocity was well known by our troops throughout the line. We were just on the verge of really getting into Germany and finding the concentration camps. This was a tremendous victory. If Bastogne had not held, the Nazis might have real well turned the course of tide in World War II in Europe. And at the through the course of the battle, the Nazis came under white flag across our lines, and General McAuliffe was sleeping. He got very little sleep in this battle. It was fought virtually 24 hours around the clock. They woke McAuliffe up at the command headquarters and said, "General, Nazis are here under white flag." Well, he actually thought they came to surrender to him, even though, you know, the 101st was surrounded and he was besieged. He felt he was running such an effective defense as long as he had artillery shells. He kept going and said, "No, General, they want you to surrender to them." And McAuliffe, waking up, said, "Oh, nuts." Well, when he sat down to really figure out what he was going to say in response, his G2 intelligence officer said, "Well, you know, General, what you said the first time wasn't bad." So McAuliffe wrote "nuts" across the ultimatum, put an exclamation on it, and he gave it to the Germans. And the Germans didn't know what it meant. We had to explain it. Well, it means no, and no in certain terms. Well, when that word was heard around the world, our troops were electrified that a besieged general from the 101st had told Hitler "nuts." And Patton said, driving north to relieve Bastogne, that any general that eloquent, he had to save, he had to relieve. And it pressed the troops even harder to get to Bastogne and to save Bastogne.
Kevin Miller in the morning, Dr. Jerome Corsi with us. No Greater Valor, talking about the Siege of Bastogne. Is it possible to have another Patton these days, considering we, you know, we love the troops, they're great, their sacrifice immeasurable, but we've all become politically correct?
Well, I think men and women who fight for us today, I think, are still enormously courageous and largely people of faith. The secular issue is not yet, you know, it's one of the reasons Thomas Nelson published this book and HarperCollins, and they're the same group that published the book on Bonhoeffer, if you'll remember, the Christian minister who had the courage to speak up early against Hitler and ultimately died in a concentration camp. I think going back to Bastogne and seeing the feeling, I mean, you know, General Marshall, who was the historian, wrote the first history of Bastogne. He said there were so many aspects of this battle that were providential. Well, providential means the hand of God. You know, McAuliffe got there at the at night. It was headed originally to Verbomont, a different town, but he decided he'd take a detour and see General Middleton, who was the corps commander at Bastogne. When McAuliffe arrived, Middleton said, "General, I'm glad you're here because you've been reassigned. The 101st is coming to Bastogne." And he didn't know that when he decided to go visit Middleton. they turned the 101st, you know, they told the MPs, and they got the 101st. They'd been driving in the middle of the night, these open trucks, cold, without supplies. They got them to Bastogne, and McAuliffe went out and picked the staging area himself because the advance party got lost. And General Marshall, writing the history, said he couldn't have picked a better staging area. It was the perfect place from which to deploy the troops when they arrived. And, of course, McAuliffe picked that area without complete knowledge. He had only an imperfect knowledge of how the battle was forming at that time. U.S. troops were trying to get intelligence on where the Nazis were and how they were attacking. But yet, he picked the right place. And General Marshall said that was really providential. And there were so many aspects of the Battle of Bastogne, the Siege of Bastogne, that it's hard to pass that element up.
Dr. Corsi, you know, when I was a kid, World War II was much more prevalent. Today, do we really appreciate that? You know, I go to the World War II Memorial, and, I mean, it's beautiful, the marble inscription where they talk about the founder, Washington, the protector of the Union, Lincoln, and in between average, ordinary Americans that stood up to totalitarianism and saved the world. You get chills saying that, but can we ever understand just how big of an impact that has had on the world? Considering today it's about ISIS, it's this, we live in such an ADD, instant gratification society?
Well, I think it's still World War II is still a theme that inspires. I mean, if you take a look at the History Channel or the, you know, the old Military Channel, the American Heroes Channel now, you'll see World War II is probably one of the most popular themes, and it has been, you know, for 20 years. The World War II is a clear indication of when the United States and the world unified against evil. I mean, there's no other way really to perceive Nazi Germany and the Holocaust. Hitler was godless evil. I mean, he was determined to engage in genocide, and we turned it back. That at great sacrifice. And the men and women who fought World War II felt that they were in a cause that had to be won. Now, I think today in our military, that feeling continues to be there, that those who defend the nation, who wear the uniform, do so continuously with great honor. As I point out, the 101st Airborne Division, which distinguished itself at Bastogne and also at Normandy and Operation Market Garden, distinguished itself in every subsequent war, Vietnam, and today is in Liberia, at, you know, great personal risk fighting Ebola. This is truly at Fort Campbell. You know, we should all shout out to the 101st and be glad we have men and women like this in service.
Dr. Corsi, please stand by. More coming up with our great friend, Dr. Jerome Corsi, author of No Greater Valor. Let's get you to work safely and on time.
And back, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, don't forget, we will have a live report from China. Simon Owen will join us. Emily Wither, the latest on ISIS. And Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, will be in at 7 o'clock. We will debate the current issue involving the district court, the one that's over the great Midwest, saying that states can say no to gay marriage. Now, will the Supreme Court continue to duck it? Those stories and more coming up. Joining us once again, our great friend, Dr. Corsi, author of No Greater Valor. And Dr. Corsi, I always have to give you props for when they got me in Pittsburgh, you were always there by my side detailing how Obama got me. So, again, I always thank you for that. But once again, thank you for always letting people know just what this administration's up to.
Well, Kevin, it's always a great pleasure to be with you, and always am thankful for the opportunity. You know, not to get off the book topic too quickly, but I think the election was clearly a repudiation of Obama's policies, and the country is not ready for a great transformation if it's in a direction of bigger government. Too many lies, too many scandals, too much you can keep your doctor when the administration knew you couldn't. And so that's all reflected in politics of dishonesty that I think we're now finding that the Republicans are going to have a chance to see if they can rectify, because certainly the country gave a resounding defeat last Tuesday to the Democrats.
Dr. Corsi, let's get a couple more questions about No Greater Valor. Then I do want to hit you with a couple questions about the president. But what relationship did Eisenhower and Truman and Roosevelt have with the troops then as opposed to what the president has today with ours?
Well, I think certainly during World War II, Eisenhower, of course, was the Allied commander in World War II and was universally viewed as one of the key people for winning World War II. And it was a tremendous victory. It was a victory that had great courage, and not only in places like Bastogne, which I'm celebrating in this book, No Greater Valor, but also, you know, going back to D-Day and going back to fighting in North Africa. So the troops loved Eisenhower. Eisenhower was always someone who the troops could rally around. Truman had a more distant relationship. Truman did fight in World War One, and he fought with distinction. He fought in Europe. He was an artillery commander, and he was in combat. But Truman had difficulties with MacArthur over Korea, and you know, there was great consternation when Truman relieved MacArthur during the Korean conflict. And you know, different commanders. John Kennedy had a pretty good relationship with Barack Obama. Has never served in the military, and he does not seem to have the same appreciation of what the U.S. military has accomplished. Barack Obama comes from a much murkier moral universe of moral relativism, in which it's hard to call right and wrong or evil. You know, we don't have a war against terrorism. Islam's not bad, even when it degenerates into barbarism. You can't even call those issues out. Well, other generations had less trouble with their moral compass. And our troops yet are loyal to the commander-in-chief, regardless of who the commander-in-chief is, because that's their oath and that's their mission. And I continue to remain proud, especially as we approach Veterans Day tomorrow, of the U.S. military. I think we all continue to owe a major debt of gratitude to the men and women who put the uniform on and dedicate a portion of their lives at the potential of great personal risk to defend the country.
Dr. Corsi, in your research for No Greater Valor here at 580 KIDO, did you discover anything more about General Patton?
Patton, remarkably, and I've studied Patton for years, but I've really delved deeply into his letters, into his diary, into what others wrote about him, into his own writings. Patton was a deeply religious man. It's hard to read a page of Patton's diary without seeing references to God. And he meant it. I mean, he really, Patton was an unusual Christian in that he did believe in reincarnation. And he thought that he was the reincarnated soul many times of a warrior, and he had a great destiny that he wanted to fulfill in his life in World War II to be again, lead a valiant army against a great foe, and he had the opportunity to do so. Bastogne was probably his highest hour. That was probably the most distinguished Patton got, because this forced march, I mean, for those who've been in the military will appreciate you take a whole army prepared to go into battle, you turn it, pivot it 90 degrees north, and you take the whole army, I mean, the Third Army, not just even one division, but, you know, three major divisions in this army, move them north with all the logistics, all the support, in the middle of a bitter winter where you're urgently trying to get to Bastogne. And Patton was deeply disappointed he didn't make it on Christmas, because he was trying to relieve Bastogne on Christmas. And, you know, finally, when the weather broke after Patton had a prayer said, Bastogne was being resupplied, the advanced units of Patton's 4th Armored could see the C-47 planes and their crews at great risk flying at low altitude to drop precisely on this little town, Bastogne. And Creighton Abrams, who was later distinguished in Vietnam, and in fact the Abrams tank is named after, led the unit that Abrams, you know, just on his own initiative, pushed ahead into Bastogne and was the first unit to relieve Bastogne. And Abrams said he just drew great inspiration from watching these C-47 pilots. If they could take the risk, he could take the risk. So that was, you know, the relief of Bastogne on Christmas, a day after Christmas, was an heroic act, and it capped off a forced march that is studied today for its logistics brilliance.
Dr. Corsi with us, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. No greater valor, the Siege of Bastogne, and the miracle that sealed Allied victory. Does God cheer for America?
I think God, I mean, I point out in the book that just because someone believes in God does not mean you're going to win a battle or win a war. But I think it's an element that helps put, you know, an army into the field that has a moral purpose. And clearly, in World War II, fighting for Bastogne, you know, you get the 101st going in the middle of the night. So here's other units retreating from the Battle of the Bulge saying, tanks are going to kill you all. And the 101st said, well, that's why they're sending us in. We'll take care of that. They had no winter clothes. They had no ammunition. They were, you know, trying to get the soldiers retreating to hand over their clothes and their weapons. They succeeded to a large extent, but that still wasn't enough. You read the stories here in Bastogne where they're in foxholes and suffering gangrene because they don't have proper footwear, and you know, the freezing and the unfreezing of the snow, they can't. They're down to no K rations. They're taking the lifesavers that they have, and they're using Sterno, and they're melting them to make soup. It's about all they have left to eat. And yet they continue to fight and continue to repel in the middle of the winter through snow and cold panzer attacks from German units that are yet extremely dangerous.
Dr. Corsi, as always, we appreciate it. You stay out of trouble.
Kevin, good to be with you again. I really appreciate it, and hope everyone listening has a great Veterans Day tomorrow.
Take care, sir.
Thank you.
Our great friend Dr. Jerome Corsi with us, his book, No Greater Valor. We continue to honor America here with Kevin Miller at 580 KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
6:39, K. Milley in the morning, 580 KIDO. Do want to remind you, coming up next week, we'll be living at the Walmart on Garrity and Franklin. Once again, Miller's Mission kicks off the holidays here in the Treasure Valley. We're calling it the Treasure Valley Turkey Challenge. We challenge each and every one of our friends to give a turkey. Don't be one. Much more at 580KIDO.com. But we would love for you to join us. The turkeys will benefit the folks at the Boise Rescue Mission. So stop out and see us. Walmart, Garrity, and Franklin will start next week at this time collecting turkeys. Joining us now, live from Jerusalem, our great friend Emily Wither, Fox News Radio. Emily, good morning.
Hello. Good morning. How are you?
Certainly, it's a tense situation where you are. What's going on?
Well, it's hard to even know where to start, Kevin, because the tension here, not only in Jerusalem, but also elsewhere in Israel, just seems to be escalating at such a rapid pace. Since the war with Gaza this summer, the tension never really went away. And in the last couple of weeks, there's been three suspected terrorist attacks, hit and runs, in which a Palestinian driver has rammed his car into Israelis waiting at at train stations, and a couple of Israelis have been killed in this manner. One of them is still being investigated. It could have been an accident, but two of them were definitely intentional. A Palestinian driver behind the wheel trying to kill Israeli citizens at the side of the road. There was also an attempted assassination attempt in Jerusalem of a Jewish activist who has been calling for greater access for Jews up to the Temple Mount, that's known as the Noble Sanctuary to Muslims. Right now, Jews can't pray up there. They can just visit it. And this activist, a Palestinian man, approached him and tried to kill him, tried to shoot him at point blank. He's still very seriously wounded in hospital. And the riots that we've been seeing here, not only in Jerusalem, are now spreading to the West Bank, and they're also spreading to northern Israel as well among Israeli Arab citizens. Over the weekend, the police shot and killed an Arab youth who they say had attacked a policeman in the north of the country. But some video footage has emerged which shows this Arab youth actually walking away from the police when he was shot. And so that's whipped up very violent protests now in several Arab towns in northern Israel. And then today, a young man wearing a soldier's uniform, a young soldier in Tel Aviv, was stabbed and may be maybe dead, actually. He's in a very serious condition in hospital, and we're getting conflicting reports about his health. This Israeli soldier was stabbed on the street while heading to the train station in Tel Aviv by a Palestinian, and that Palestinian has been arrested. We don't know what the motives were, but it certainly has nationalist undertones.
What has been the impact of the folks there? We call it tents, but fear, the idea of just walking around, and never mind the folks coming out of the tunnels in the old days. Now we've just got people on the streets killing people for no apparent reason.
So I think you've made a good point there by saying the word fear, because usually there is tension in this country, in Israel and in the West Bank. That tension exists between Israelis and Palestinians, and it always has. But something's changed over the last few weeks, and it's no longer just tension, it is fear. People are just simply afraid to walk around here. There have been concrete blocks, for example, that have been put up at the train stops here in Jerusalem. There's a big lightweight rail train system that goes through the city. It's very popular here, and people have become afraid to wait at these train stations. They've put up these concrete blocks, but you ask anyone who's waiting at those stops, they're nervous to be there. And the fact that this Israeli soldier has now been stabbed on the street, that is going to send a ripple of concern throughout the country, because we have to remember that in Israel, the military is compulsory, and it's not unusual to walk around the streets of Israel and see people wearing military uniform. Tons of people are wearing it. Every kid here, before they go to university, has to join the military. So as you can imagine, anyone now walking around in their uniform, they used to do it very proudly, they're going to be watching their backs a little bit more after an attack like this. So these sorts of incidents are doing, I think, what they're intended to, and that is spread fear.
Emily, what about the citizens of Israel? Are they allowed to carry weapons like here in America, where we can carry guns to protect ourselves?
So when you see soldiers walking around here, they are carrying their guns with them. They're not loaded, though, but they always have their guns with them. So when you first come to Israel, you might be a bit taken aback when you see people walking around with, you know, guns sort of slung over their shoulder, but it's their duty to look after their weapon, and they tend to carry it with them. As I said, though, they're not loaded. They're not able to then shoot at people in the street. When it comes to other people owning weaponry, certainly among the settler communities, the Israelis who are moving to the West Bank to live there, they are armed to the teeth. They have guns with them, and they're not afraid to use them. There are often incidents here where settlers will try and shoot Palestinians if they're caught in their farmland or trying to approach settlements. They say that it's self-protection. And so, you know, people do have access to weaponry here. In this case, the stabbing that happened today, this was a Palestinian. He was from Nablus, which is on the West Bank. He was in Israel illegally, and there are reports that as he was stabbing this soldier, he was also trying to steal his gun.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning with Emily Wither live from Jerusalem. Emily, now you've got the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, talking about Iran, once again urging the world not to cave in. What's the vibe in Israel, in Jerusalem, about that, considering that the president and the administration here wants desperately, according to what we hear, a deal with Iran?
There has been a lot of concern among the Israeli establishment, among officials here, about the U.S.'s reapproachment with Iran, particularly because relations between Israel and the U.S. are at rock bottom at the moment. There were many editorials here a couple of weeks ago about a word that was used to describe the Israeli prime minister by an American official in the administration. Not a very favorable word. I won't say it on the radio, but basically calling Netanyahu a coward. And it did lead to a lot of discussion here in Israel about how relations between the U.S. and the Israeli government just got so bad. And people here are worried about that. Then they see reports that the U.S. is writing letters to the Iran supreme leader, that they are trying to improve relations, possibly open some kind of trade office in Iran. That's going to make the Israelis pretty concerned, given the state of relations right now.
Finally, the threat of ISIS, the Israeli thoughts on those folks.
I don't think the Israelis are too concerned about ISIS at the moment, just because they're dealing with a lot of homegrown issues. But one thing that you have to consider as well, which I've heard discussed here, is that many people, when Secretary of State John Kerry was trying to revive the peace talks here, were discussing whether the time might be right for peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And as a counter-argument argument to that, some Israelis were saying that actually now was definitely not the time to give the Palestinians their own state because of the threat of ISIS. There is a lot of fear that ISIS sympathizers are going to take root in the West Bank or among Palestinians in East Jerusalem, or even worse, in Gaza, where Hamas already rules Gaza, that there may be ISIS sympathizers taking root inside that tiny piece of land. And so for the Israelis to then hand over security to an independent Palestinian state with those concerns, it's going to be less likely to happen if the Israelis don't feel that their security needs have been met.
Emily Wither, live from Jerusalem, Fox News Radio. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Let's get you to traffic. You're listening to Kevin Miller on...
Two people took 46-year-old Jeffrey Dyer against his will. Now he's dead.
The tension here, not only in Jerusalem, but also elsewhere in Israel, just seems to be escalating at such a rapid pace.
Making sense of a senseless world. Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Just another manic Monday.
6:52, I know you're wondering if there's any good news, especially when you got this kidnapped Nampa man found dead in his car. We've also got the story out of California where you have a veteran returning home and is shot at his homecoming. That is the reason why we have the power of prayer, number one, here. By the way, Kay Milley with you, 580KIDO. Coming up, we'll talk about states' rights versus same-sex marriage. Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, is with us. Also, the impacts of Obamacare. Great article in Forbes about that. And big ups to our friends at Winco. If you go to Kevin Miller Show on Facebook, you'll see a great link to Winco. And just getting props for treating their people with respect. And you have some millionaires that have worked at Winco, and that's awesome. A local company valuing people, not just talking the talk, but actually providing great service. You know, a story that I haven't touched on that I wanted to a couple weeks ago, we were just, you know, this show is like a bucket. And when we have too many issues, too much, it's like a bucket with too much water. And we never got to the story, the crazy story about the guy shooting at the other guy in the car on, what was it, 84 over by the 10 mile. And the police are still looking for this gentleman, this suspect. I don't know about you, but if we're going to start importing thugs from other places that have come to Idaho to try and bully people as they have in California, all that's going to do for the people here is make sure that we're better armed. I don't know how anyone can argue against people carrying guns when you hear about this story. You know, our great friend Greg Pruitt, Tony Sinesco, and others put it on the line, and I hope that our legislators that are listening, getting ready for the big session, they're having their meetings, meeting with the new caucuses and this, that, and the other, we'll take a look at the specific dangers. It's kind of like this. You ever had a fire in your house? You know what I'm saying. You ever had a fire in your house where you call the fire department? How long does it take the fire department to get to your house? 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes. They can't be there to stop the fire. And let me tell you this. You remember when my house partially burned down in Meridian? People made jokes about it. I didn't. And you know why? Because I saw firsthand how long it took well-meaning and responsible firefighters to get to my house. I lived a half a mile away. Because of the unique dry conditions, the place would have been burned up. And myself and, at the time, Bama and Carolina would have been homeless. I took matters into my own hands. I got a hose out. We always think that our friends are going to help us. Literally, I had five of my neighbors watch. They didn't offer to help. They didn't offer to call the fire. Oh, one lady did, but she was busy. And they just sat there. And then they came over and judged me. So when we're talking about dangers to you and your family, why would you not be armed? why would you not have a weapon in your car? Well, Kevin, this isn't California. We don't have road rage shootings here. We do. It just happened. A guy driving in his car thought that he was cut off. Maybe he's on drugs because he has no respect for human life, no respect for dignity, no respect for others, tries to shoot someone. Now, we can talk about mental health and the like, but who in their right mind does that? So how do you respond? Well, you call the police, and they're well-meaning, and they don't like it, at least the leadership in the police departments in Ada and Canyon counties, don't like it when I tell the truth about this. But the police aren't going to get there to stop the road rage guy shooting at you. If someone comes after you, you have a right to protect yourself, do you not? So I hope in this legislature that we actually give more teeth to it. Remember how controversial it was when we had people just wanting to carry on campus. Remember that? When we had people saying, well, I don't think that it's appropriate to carry on campus. We had the retiring police chief of Boise come out against it, right? He's dedicated his life to law enforcement, but he believes the police can do it. Do you? Think about that. We'll get back to that throughout the day. It is 41 in Meridian. Time for traffic.
We think it's a bad law. We think it's a bad mix. We don't think it's necessary, given the climates that we have on our college campuses. We're supported by the college leaders who unanimously agree that...
you remember that, Chief Masterson, back in the day, speaking out against the campus concealed carry laws. Quite frankly, here, don't tell anybody. The secrecy bell's in session. I say a better-armed Idaho is a better-armed America. And better safe than sorry, right? When will the media ever wake up and understand it's guns and the people that use them properly and protect the laws that actually keep us safe away from these criminals driving in, right? More coming up next, 580 KIDO.